the tape minister. My name is Esther Min, for those of you who haven't met me already. And this whole week we've been doing a study of the wisdom literature in the Bible. And the title that I gave the whole series was Wisdom Literature, the Voice of Human Experience in the Bible. And often we think of the Bible as the Word of God, but it's very interesting that in the wisdom literature we have the voice of human experience as part of our Bible, reflection on life and all of the conclusions that people have drawn on it. The first couple of days we looked at Proverbs as kind of our starting point because that's the most traditional of the wisdom literature in the Bible. And we looked at the ancient Near Eastern wisdom literature, especially in Egypt, in the royal courts, there was literature in which the father, perhaps a king or an official, would write telling his son how to conduct his life, how to be a good king, or how to rise in the royal court. And there's some parallels that we noted between this literature, especially a certain work called The Instructions of Amen Mope, and parts in Proverbs. But then we looked at the short Proverbs that are found in the body of the book of Proverbs, and we noticed the very practical kind of common sense wisdom that's summed up there that was meant to be passed on to the next generation. And we noticed the humor and the seeming kind of timeless wisdom that's contained in that book. And then we looked at the opening section the next day, the first 9 chapters, and we saw kind of philosophy of education, that there are 2 paths a person could follow. One is the path of wisdom, the other is folly. And wisdom was personified by a woman, as was folly. And then wisdom was seen as being present at creation. In fact, God creating the world with wisdom. So there's these kind of structures of justice and that the paths of righteousness are firm and established within the very created order. So there's a kind of optimism within Proverbs. You can find wisdom. You can follow wisdom's path. It's a way of living, which is very practical. And if you follow a certain path, then you'll have success and rewards and so forth. And, you know, even today there's kind of a common understanding that if you work hard, you'll succeed. And if you don't, you won't succeed. So that's kind of Proverbs' basic point of view. Then on Wednesday we looked at Job, and Job is another voice within the wisdom literature and says, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't always work out. You know, there are instances where people are suffering, and it's not because of their own lack of wisdom or their lack of efforts or so forth. So that's a very important dissenting voice within the wisdom literature that responds to Proverbs' optimism and its conviction that there are rewards and punishments. And then yesterday and today we were looking at another dissenting voice, a very unusual book in the Bible. The book of Ecclesiastes really stands out, and I enjoy it for that reason as well as for others. And yesterday we looked at the image of the king, King Solomon, searched for meaning in life, and he tried everything, tried wisdom, finding wisdom, tried pleasure, tried a lot of wives, tried building projects, he tried everything, trying to find some kind of meaning, some kind of significance, and everything just seemed passing. That word, vanity of vanities, that's kind of the refrain in Ecclesiastes, vanity of vanities. The Hebrew word, hevel, which is vanity. It says hevel hevelin, vanity of vanities. Means a breath, or like a puff of air. It's like when you go outside on a cold day and you blow your breath and you see it's there and then it's not. Where did it go? It's just that passing. And so the word vanity for us kind of has different associations now. You know, it seems kind of a vain person's one who's kind of puffed up and, you know, too proud or whatever. But in Hebrew, actually, the word means, stresses more the transience, how everything passes. And this is what the writer of Ecclesiastes is noticing. He's looking at human experience from the point of view that everybody dies, and so he's wondering, in the face of death, what do our lives mean? Vanity of vanities, hevelim, that means the most vain thing, the most passing thing, the most transient thing. It's like Song of Songs, the best song. You know, so that's kind of the way the superlative goes in Hebrew. we pointed out yesterday that this book, Ecclesiastes, is one of the five scrolls in the Hebrew Bible that are used in connection with a festival. There are five little books in the Hebrew Bible: Ruth, Esther, Ecclesiastes, Song of Songs, and Lamentations. And they're each used in association with a festival, and very well loved. I quoted a colleague of mine who says these are the five books that Jews love and Christians never read. So this is one of them, and this particular festival that it's used at is called Sukkot or Booths, and this is in commemoration of the travel in the wilderness and the receiving of the covenant, where the practice is to build a very temporary structure outside, like a tent, but made out of branches, and you live out there pretty much. And it recalls the wilderness experience, but also calls to mind that all people are equal. You know, once we remove ourselves from our strong houses and so forth and live simply, we're all the same. And Ecclesiastes also points that out when he keeps talking about, you know, but everybody dies. So it's all, you know, so brief. Everyone's the same in that way. And also during this festival, there's a celebration of the joys of simple living. You know, just the joy which God gave us in everyday life, and simple things like eating out, you know, in the hut and sleeping outside, just those simple things. It reminds people that God's given everyone the gift of joy. So now what I wanted to do today was I wanted to look at and read together a few of the passages which are in Ecclesiastes, and then especially I wanted to look at his idea of his answer to the question of, is there any justice in this world here? And then as soon as we read these passages together, you know, if you have reactions at that time, that's great. But after we've read these selected passages, then we will break down in small groups and talk for about 10 minutes, and then we'll get back together and share our common wisdom. Where we'll start today is in chapter 3. That's a famous passage. This is the passage about a time for everything. And there's someone here who would like to read that would be really super. And that's 3, 1 through 15.
I will.
Great.
For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. What gain has the worker from his toil? Through 11, right?
You can 15. Go on to 15.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a little reflection on this passage then.
What gain has the worker from his toil? I have seen the business that God has given to the sons of men to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's mind, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I know that there is nothing better for them than to be happy and enjoy themselves as long as they live. Also, that it is God's gift to man that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. I know that whatever God does endure forever, nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has made it so, in order that men should fear before him. That which is already has been, that which is to be already has been, and God seeks what has been driven away.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, so a time for everything. This is a famous song by who?
The Doors?
Birds.
The Birds.
I know, it's one of those object groups. The Birds. Okay, thank you. interesting. A time for everything here. Both, it seems both positive and negative things. In his reflection in this poem here, the author, Kohelet, seems to stress the sort of mystery of how things happen, each in its own time, and people don't exactly understand, you know, what's happening, or why things happen when they happen and so forth. There seems to be a bit of predestination or predetermination here in this passage in 14 forward, you know. It says, I know that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it nor taken away from it. Yesterday we also looked at a passage where there's contact with Greek ways of thinking about things when we looked at the section about immortality of the soul, which is a Greek concept. And here's another concept that everything's fixed and determined is a very Greek concept. It's not Hebrew at all, at least not in the old style of Hebrew writing, where people are responsible actors, you know, and choose what they'll do, and then God responds to them. But here it's almost that, you know, God is controlling, and people don't exactly understand what is happening or why. And then all this, then his counsel once again is to enjoy your life, you know, whatever it is. That's another kind of refrain here that we have. Besides everything so brief, so enjoy it. You hear that over and over again. I'm sure that you've heard this passage before. What have been your reactions or reflections on this passage in the past when you run into it?
Whatever you're doing, do it. If you're going to cry, go ahead and cry. If you're going to build it up, and don't just do a halfway job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It seems to be a good philosophy. Comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Very poetic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So comforting, because instead of saying, you know, we should always be joyful, we should always be, you know, mm-hmm. this, there's mm-hmm. there's a little recognition that there are seasons and appropriate things mm-hmm. for each season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to recognize the reality of what's there, instead of, you know, it's so easy to need to grieve, but to deny that is to be sick, and to need to laugh and love and deny that is to be sick.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sort of a balancing.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard this text used at funerals, reflecting the seasons of a person's life, how there are seasons and times of good and bad and indifference and sadness
mm-hmm.
and joy.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how they use verse 9 then.
You really ended at verse
8. No.
Right.
You always ended at verse
8. Right, that's one of Ecclesiastes, the writer of Ecclesiastes' favorite things. What gain is the worker from his toil? He always throws that in. Oh. We keep working so hard.
Well, it kind of, but throughout mm-hmm. it kind of says, well, the gain from the toil is the process of doing the toil itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and he stresses that again when he reflects on this poem. It's, okay, so he presents the poem, and then he has this reflection on it. After that, God's made us busy and so forth. And 13 also is God's gift to man that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. So that idea, mm-hmm. It's the process of working that mm-hmm. gives pleasure, not the result so much.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hadn't thought about this before, but the song is turn, turn, turn.
Mm-hmm.
And the word turn doesn't occur in here. And how much it's a part of our vocabulary, it's an idiom that it's your turn, it's my turn, and you turn, whenever you turn, you are going around.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to continue your turn, most of us just take a right turn. But is the cyclical thing a part of this? Or?
Yeah, it seems to be, right? Because, well, especially if you, in the beginning, the very first verse, first chapter that we looked at yesterday, it talks about one generation goes, a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises, the sun goes down, hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south, goes around to the north, round and round. So this idea of circularity, that everything goes around.
I'm going to picture wind going either one way or the other, but not round.
They must think it's all one, making a big circle here. It's a really beautiful passage here. A touch of that predestination kind of idea, which is really an unusual voice within the Hebrew Bible. Let's go on and look at some of the three passages that have to do with some other observations that the author, that Ecclesiastes makes about life. We could look at a number of things. There's a lot of really fascinating small verses and wisdom in Ecclesiastes. He's rather an original thinker, and he reflects on some of the traditional teachings and often has either a contradictory word or else an additional word, comment on it. But today we're just going to look at this whole idea of if there is justice, if there is this whole system of rewards and punishments according to what people do. So let's look for one at starting with 3:16 down to 4:3. Who will read? You want to? Great.
Moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness, and in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for he has appointed a time for every matter and for every work. I said in my heart with regard to the sons of men, that God is testing them to show them that they are but beasts. For the fate of the sons of the men and the fate of the beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beast, for all is vanity. All go to one place. All are from the dust, and all turn to dust again. Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward, and the spirit of the beast goes down to the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better than that a man should enjoy his work, for that is his lot. Who can bring him to see what will be after him? Again, I saw all the oppressions that are practiced under the sun. And behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors there was power, and there was no one to comfort them. And I thought the dead who are already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been, and has not seen evil deeds that are done under the sun. RSV.
Thank you. So, better not to ever have been born than to see what's going on in this world. Here's a pessimistic note here. Deepest pessimism. There's no justice. The wicked and the righteous aren't being distinguished out. He says, well, he has some confidence here. He says, God will judge the righteousness and righteous and wicked, but he doesn't see it. And And he says, and he kind of brings up the possibility, well, maybe it's an afterlife kind of thing. And he says, no. We're all the same. We're just like animals. We just die. So that's not going to work either. So he says, well, so then it's better just to be dead. But once again, his refrain, men should enjoy work, enjoy their work, but that's their lot. Let's read a couple more of these passages, and then we can reflect on them. 7, 15 through 18 is another. Thank you.
In my vain life, I have seen everything. There is a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his evil doing. Be not righteous overmuch, and do not make yourself overwise. Why should you destroy yourself? Be not wicked overmuch. Neither be a fool. Why should you die before your time? It is good that you should take time, that you should take hold of this. And from that withhold not your hand, for he who fears God shall come forth from them all.
Okay. So the righteous sometimes perishes in his experience, and the wicked has success. So his advice? Oh, gosh.
But he who fears God shall come forth.
Right. Well, it's really funny because, first of all, it starts out, you know, well, the righteous perish and the wicked prosper, so don't be too righteous. But then don't be too wicked, but don't be foolish. And then he kind of goes back to tradition. It's like, wow, what am I saying here? And he says, he who fears God shall come forth from the law. So it's like he's kind of gone too far for himself, and he has to go back and say, no, I know there's, you know. God will take care of it eventually, but really a radical statement when you compare it to the optimism of Proverbs that, you know, the righteous get their rewards and the wicked are punished. And here, with his own eyes, he's seen this happen, so it's reflecting. One more passage here. This is 8:10 through 9:6 on this theme. Great.
Then I saw the wicked buried. They used to go in and out of the holy place and were praised in the city where they had done such things. This also is vanity. Because since against an evil deed is not executed speedily, the heart of the sons of men is fully set to do evil. Though a sinner does evil 100 times and prolongs his life, yet I know that it will be well with those who fear God because they fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked, neither will he prolong his days like a shadow, because he does not fear before God. There is a vanity which takes place on earth, that there are righteous men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked, and there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. And I commend enjoyment, for man has no good thing under the sun but to eat and drink and enjoy himself. For this will go with him in his toil through the days of life which God gives him under the sun. When I applied my mind to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, how neither day nor night one's eyes see sleep, then I saw all the work of God, that man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. However much man may toil in seeking, he will not find it out. Even though a wise man claims to know, he cannot find it out. But all this I laid to heart, examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God. Whether it is love or hate, man does not know. Everything before them is vanity, since one fate comes to all, to the righteous and to the wicked, to the good and to the evil, to the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As is the good man, so is the sinner, and he who swears is as he who shuns an oath. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that one fate comes to all. Also the hearts of men are full of evil, and madness is in their hearts while they live, and after that they go to the dead. But he who is joined with all the living has hope, for a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing, and they have no more reward, but the memory of them is lost. Their love and their hate and their envy have already perished, and they have no more forever any share in all that is done under the sun.
Okay, thanks. So it's interesting, here he says a living dog is better than a dead lion. Before he was saying, yeah, it's better to be dead. But here he says, well, at least the living know that they're going to die. So he's grappling with this whole question of what does life mean in the face of, you know, a common fate, death. And that refrain, you know, enjoy your life. Because enjoyment is a gift from God. It comes up over and over. And his fullest statement of that is in this next section right here, which is really a beautiful passage. This is one of my sister's favorite biblical passages here. If somebody read 9:7 down to 10. This is his fullest expression of his conclusions.
Go eat your food with gladness and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for it is now that God favors what you do. Always be clothed in white and always anoint your head with oil. Enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days, for this is your lot in life and your toilsome labor under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For in the grave where you are going, there is neither working nor pleasure, nor knowledge nor wisdom.
Okay, thank you. So
that version translated vain life to meaningless life.
Meaningless. Yeah, I think we probably have some other translations of...
What was that? New International.
New International, yeah. There were some... Feudal. You have feudal life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those actually approach more this idea of, you know, the brevity of it, rather than your vain life, you know, that you're somehow... You think you're more than you are. Oh, well, you know, at the root of it, vanity is connected to this. In that, you know, now if you're vain, you kind of conceited. You think you're more than you are. And here, he's pointing out, it's just so quick. It amounts to almost nothing. So both of them have some of the same idea. But yeah, it's helpful to hear meaningless and futile. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, one last passage before we go into groups and reflect on this material here. And that is, starting in 11:9, this is the last part here. If you remember, the wisdom literature that we looked at in Proverbs was addressed by a father to a son. And here we have a return to this form, where it's the elder person instructing the young man. And this time, not exactly the same kind of advice, but we do return to that instruction of the young by the old. And it's really in this a beautiful description of growing old too. It's very touching, I think. And so if somebody would read from starting with 11:9 down to the end of the words of Kohelet, or the preacher, down in 12:8. Where he has to end with vanity of vanities, of course, his refrain. But would somebody please read 11:9 down to 12:8? Thank you.
Rejoice, O young man, when you're not a youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment. Remove vexation from your mind and put away pain from your body, for youth and the dawn of life are vanity. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw nigh, when you will say, I have no pleasure in them, before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened, and the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men are bent, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look through the window and the doors on the street are shut. When the sound of the grinding is low, and one rises up with the voice of a bird, and all the daughters of song are brought low. They are afraid also of what is high, and terrors are in the way. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags itself along, and desire fails, goes into his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. Before the silver cord is snapped, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity.
Mm-hmm. So here we have some of these phrases here seem to be allusions to different parts of the body and so forth. In the days when the keepers of the house, probably the arms, tremble, and the strong men or the legs are bent, and the grinders, the teeth, cease because they're few. Those that look through the windows are dim, the eyes. Well, let me, yeah, here's another riddle for you. And the doors on the street are shut, what do you think?
Ears.
Now, I don't know about the sound of the grinding is low. I don't know about that. But, and one rises up at the voice of the bird. It said that the sleep of the elderly is very, very light sleep, easily disturbed, and so forth. So a description of the aging process. And then death described as, in these ways, like the silver cord being snapped, or the golden bowl broken, pitcher broken at the fountain, so forth. Very, very beautiful and touching imagery of aging process and dying here. Well, I have a few questions for you to reflect on. Why don't you get into groups of four, and before you even look at the questions, just give some of your immediate reactions to the material we've been reading, and then I have some questions for reflection, and we'll get back together then in about 10 minutes and talk about what you discovered. So I think four is a really good number for a group because it's small enough. And do we have anybody? One group could go outside there. There's a little bit of room outside. It's a little bit more than you could like to go outside. Well, you might want to just give a reaction.
Here's some questions for you if you prefer to reflect on these.
Part of this one, yeah, so the idea was, oh, yeah. Now, they're not, it's not enjoying.
How do you feel about that? They want to do a job they like.
Right.
They think they're gone, but they have to enjoy it.
But they always want to have a part, enjoy your work, but it's not, it doesn't. It's almost like the reward of youth is youth. The reward of youth is not a riches or trials. We are used to pass.
Right.
We're better used to pass. And that's why we're real fast. It's for anybody.
Traditional attitude to the book of Ecclesiastes within the Christian church. And you don't hear this so much anymore because now most scholarship tries to look at the book itself and see what we can get out of it. But this is a traditional reaction within the Christian church to the book of Ecclesiastes. And I'm just curious to hear what you think about it. I summarize this whole way of looking at it by saying Ecclesiastes states the problem of human existence, which the New Testament answers. So what's your reaction to that? That might be another question for you to react to that.
The point is that maybe an Old Testament scholar, well, an Old Testament scholar would say that Jesus would be
white. I think he would. That's trivializing.
Take about another minute and then we'll get back together.
If you think you know the answer, but you don't understand the question.
I think it relates to the question.
Like, it's the same things because we just, you know, so it's kind of the. The type of Christianity. In some ways, I've got these. They don't even want to hear me ask questions. So the question involves all of the problems, like this is all pointless. Injustice, suffering, everything.
Well, how is it why would it change this? I mean, he talks to me about how he has smiling because Jesus loves the silence in the darkness.
I think you still write the same stuff, but you listen to those kind of things, whatever. You can't even remember that you don't have hope.
And if some topic comes up that somebody wants to comment on, then please do. And at the end, there'll be time for other reactions to the books that aren't the book that aren't discussed here. So, what did you feel that the wisdom which Ecclesiastes desires to pass on to the young is? Do you want to start over here?
Well, I don't think. My personal feeling is I don't think the young would seek out the wisdom that's in this. There's so much futility. If it was a young person reading it, I don't know that they don't think there's a need for a time to mourn and a time to be sad and a time for things to be going wrong when they're young.
Interesting.
They think they're immortal and that they're going to be fine.
Interesting. Okay, this group.
Moderation.
Moderation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. You ever hear? What were your reflections?
What did we decide?
Oh, I thought we decided that.
We're going to figure it out.
You don't have a spokesman, can you tell?
That the writer wasn't Republican. He probably wasn't Democrat. Go ahead, Andrew.
Ross Perot did not write.
Yeah, moderation, and that really was just to enjoy life while you can, and I mean, while keeping in mind that it's only for the moment. I mean,
and that's moderation?
Well, yes and no, but I mean, it's keeping, you know, enjoy it, but why go to an extreme? You know, don't work yourself to death because, you know, it's not going to last anyway. So, you know, it's just kind of like, just enjoy work, you know. It's like, don't go overboard with it, and don't be overly lazy either.
That's what we said, moderation.
Mm-hmm. And that whole theme of enjoyment keeps coming up over and over again. It almost sounds like somebody wrote it who didn't take that time out to smell the flowers, you know, and now he's old. So he's trying to tell the young people, you know, you guys are young, so, you know, enjoy it.
But it's not just enjoyment, it's enjoy your toil. Which
yeah.
is
enjoy
like
your
an
toil.
Oxymoron.
Yeah.
Because toil is supposed to be lack of enjoyment.
Well, yeah, enjoy your work.
Don't feel that way about their work.
That,
know?
No, but that is the point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Enjoy your work, it's not just enjoy.
Yeah, enjoy your work.
Enjoy, enjoy life, but life is work.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It talks about enjoying eating and drinking and later, you know, being with your wife and, you know, if it were going to be for somebody else, with your family, I guess, and enjoying your work. So what Freud said, health is, mental health is to be able to work and to love. And he seems to come close to that anyway.
And to remember that God is always there.
God is always there,
I get a sense of it. That he has a strong faith that God is there, but that as humans we're not going to see the justice of it all. Will not try if there isn't any.
I missed in this relationship language between God and the author. Mm-hmm. A lot of talk about God, but not about God in relationship. Mm-hmm. I missed that.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost a distant.
Mm-hmm.
The fear was definitely the more.
I sensed that some thoughts of hopelessness.
Hopelessness,
Which I think if it had been, if he had known about Christ, he may have had the hope that I don't see here.
Mm-hmm. That's the fourth question.
Oh, excuse me.
but thank you, because
yes.
We are talking about, you know, what he's been able to learn and pass on and so forth. So thanks for your reaction to that. Mm-hmm.
We thought just a little bit about the high number of suicides among youth, which is the second highest cause of death right now. And this could really feed that.
Oh, so here we are. Who would benefit most from reading Ecclesiastes? You'd say, watch out who you gave it to. Okay.
Well, you just make sure they finish, you know.
It's like reading the last chapter first.
Right, don't let them read that. That part where it says better to be dead than alive, and better not to have been born to have been born at all, right? Yeah. Don't let him stop there.
Let me tell you, I was really depressed through high school, you know, the whole junior high school, and into college until I got more involved. God again, and I read this, and I was just like, wow, I just couldn't believe it. It's just like exactly what I've been thinking for years and years and years.
Did it give you, how did you feel then after you read it? Did it give you more courage and hope, or did it discourage you?
Well, at that point it already kind of turned my life around, so, it was just kind of like, yeah, this is exactly, you know, how you've been feeling, like things are really meaningless and can't really accomplish anything. It's like, trying. you know, that you could see, and then what it was like, and this way my life is now, it's like, if you don't have God, you might as well kill yourself, because there isn't any point.
Mm-hmm.
So that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that. I like to talk about this book with people who don't, you know, have negative, don't believe in Christianity and don't believe in God, and I just say, well, you know, what do you think? You know, why do you even exist?
Mm.
You know, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
That's why there's suicide.
But you know, I mean, it sounds like it's helpful to have within the Bible a kind of a realistic expression of people's disappointments, you know, and that maybe it won't lead to suicide, because I think that we already have within us the kind of despair and disappointment and feeling, you know, what's this all worth? Because, you know, even before you came to the book, it's not like you read the book and said, oh yeah, there's no point. But actually the book was in the Bible, and it gave
like
words to your experience.
It's like everyone mm-hmm. else thinks the same things.
That's well, you hear someone else's psychology, you know, it's really his processing, and he differs with himself.
Mm-hmm.
I hate toil, I love toil,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is what we
better
do.
Better to be dead, better to be alive.
Right, I know. What does that mean?
But maybe
we do that.
Maybe people would benefit as well as, say, a young person who's struggling is people who interact with young people.
Mm.
Because we're the, you know, it's like if it's a parent or a teacher or a counselor or a pastor or somebody who's, well, what expectations are you forcing on this kid?
Mm-hmm.
And this would say, the reward of youth is youth. The reward of being alive is being alive, and just
mm-hmm.
that's where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
Not med school or, you know, you have to succeed in that American ethic of,
mm-hmm.
that you can't enjoy what you're doing now because you have to get to grad school or get to college and all that down the line.
Mm-hmm. You have to be a success, so you have to do all this stuff. And
so then maybe he's counteracting that as much
mm-hmm.
as he is.
Mm-hmm. Great. Let's one here and then in here. Mm-hmm.
But TJ, to get at number three,
mm-hmm.
the miracle of divine inspiration, how a book by Woody Allen could get into the script.
You think this is the Woody Allen?
That's what I was saying.
No, I don't get. You have to elaborate this view.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's saying.
It is.
And that brings up the reality factor, why he's still, in spite of everything going on right now, has some appeal to people.
Mm-hmm.
Because he faces up to that, you know, that reality.
Mm-hmm. And we might, you know, in our churches kind of gloss over that and, you know, say, well, we're one in Christ's love and so forth, and so there's this sense, you know, that we don't have disappointments and so forth, but this book is like, boy, you know, life can really be a downer, and what do you do then? So it's part of the, here it is, it's part of what makes us who we are. Uh-huh.
Part of my problem in life is that my thoughts of who I am and what I think of myself is dependent on what I am doing and how well I am doing what I am doing, which is not very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think to rejoice in your work is okay, but in a sense, there has to be a rejoicing that goes beyond. There has to be a sense of identity and worth that goes beyond what you were doing, because what you were doing may really suck sometimes,
mm-hmm.
even going
mm-hmm.
in old phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Our pastor says it's a real danger to be a human doing instead of a human being.
Oh yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so often what we are doing is a cop out of what we should be being or what we are being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like when someone asks you the question, well, what do you do?
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, that's
or who are you? Well, I am a
dentist. I'm a carpenter.
Well, it has to do with self-esteem issues.
Yeah.
You know? And if you're not something special, then you feel that your self-esteem is on the floor. And really, God loves us all and
equally. Mm-hmm. Over here.
The subject of the question is, what about when you retire?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you then?
Mm-hmm. There's one advocate. No, but that really is true. In that those opening chapters, in that first chapter, Solomon tried it all. He tried to gain his self-worth and his self-identity through, you know, becoming wise and, you know, all the things he did. And he felt so empty. So then he saw life as a gift from God, and you know, the enjoyment just of simply living. You know, I think that's the message of grace that's in this book. That it's not our striving to be something that makes us, or can ever make us happy or content, but it's God's gift of life. We may not understand what's going on exactly, but it's all a gift.
Yeah, and one frustrating thing, though, when you're working to somebody else who doesn't give a darn about the work they're doing. You know, so it's really tough.
In the earlier group, there was a comment. They said that the youth, they thought youth would benefit from the book, but they also thought that the people who were older also, who had had careers and were wondering about the meaning of their life, that they also would find it a valuable book. Did anyone share that feeling, or was there, is there dissent with that view? No? Okay, great. Okay, so what about this? We only have more than 2 minutes. We're already 2 minutes over time, so we have to go. But I just have to get your reaction to this quickly here. Ecclesiastes states the problem of human existence, which the New Testament answers. What were your reflections on this question here?
Yeah, even before you put that one up, I'd already commented on that and said that I thought it was in a way almost continuous with the New Testament philosophy of just, you know, storing up treasures isn't going to do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not going to get you anywhere. And remember God, you know, and they didn't have Jesus at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the idea, I think, was there that you have to trust, you know, and look to God for your answers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you see continuity.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't believe in the hereafterness at all. You're dust when you're done. So how could God have anything to do with, if you're dust when you're done, instead of a spirit?
Mm-hmm. So you see a discontinuity?
Or? Oh, absolutely. A dead end.
Mm-hmm. You see this as a dead end?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the,
when there's no hereafter and no God.
Uh-huh. Boy, okay, we got one, two. Who else wants to speak on this issue? One, two. Yeah.
I see him as fearing God as someone who's judging and not someone who's giving hope. Which the New Testament.
Oh, okay. So you don't find it as hopeful as some of the passages in the New Testament. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm reading a book from the library by C.S. Lewis about the problem of pain, and he seems to indicate that much of what we're reading in Ecclesiastes is person living with person and how. Because each one can't have all revolving around his well-being, that there are going to be points of conflict and that these points of conflict necessarily bring pain. But he would say, I'm only halfway through, he would say that we can't focus on ourselves and God's kindness and benefit to us, but that we are created creatures and that we must look to God and His will and His well-being. And I think here, because the focus is on the self and how the self is being crunched, that then it causes us to look to God, and maybe it's just to show the futility of our looking to our own well-being.
Mm-hmm. Right, thank you. I know you had something to say.
Ecclesiastes had never been written. The gospel, the people who carry the gospel, are always addressing what this says anyway.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's a strong expression of the human condition, I think. Yeah. Any final reflections or works? Yes.
Do you have any more lectures?
No. This is, I'm going back to Chicago.
Oh, so, was this your last one today?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I thought it was. So thank you. Thank you. To thank you for all your reflections. I think this has really worked out well with the small groups, because people then come back and they have a lot more to say, because you know, you've all reflected. And so I think I've learned a little bit about a good way of teaching that involves more people. So I really appreciate that. And I guess I like the book of Ecclesiastes because it is such an oddball and it is so realistic, and there is this element of grace, that you can't make yourself into, you know, a success or a happy being, but it's given by God. So I like it for that reason. And I like the wisdom literature because I think that it emphasizes that, you know, God's given us a brain to think about our own experiences, and that's part of the way that we come to know God and God's creation. So thank you very much for studying this material with me.
Bye-bye. You're a good teacher.
Thank you.